Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 48 of On Tap with Corey and Ira. We hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving Thursday and whatever you call Friday, because it's a different day to different people. And as you're listening today, we hope you have a good small business Saturday and you're supporting local businesses like the breweries that we interview. And speaking of breweries that we interview, this is episode number 48. Ira, we interviewed one.
Yeah, we hit the long road up to Shakopee. We're going to try to go to the amusement park, but it was closed. So we decided to, instead of going to Valley Fair, we went over to Badger Hill.
And we knocked on the fence. Nobody answered.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. They didn't let us in.
We should have went Wally World on the bid and just found John Candy and we can get our little BB gun and go on all the rides.
Yeah,
but that would have worked out well for us, I'm sure.
Yeah, but we ended up going over to Badger Hill and had a great amusing chat with Mike, the former head brewer, now the new CTO, which is he found even amusing the title for himself.
Don't give it away.
Yeah, and then
we call that the tease in the business, right?
Yep. And then Ariel, who some of you may recognize from the Tanswall days, if you were some of the people going in there. So she moved over there, and she was helpful enough to help us get in with this interview and stuff. And no, it was a great interview. It kind of goes a little wild all over the place and kind of for a fun interview. So no, great chat with them. We talk a couple of seasonal beers with Firehouse Liquor for our beers of the week. And of course, style of the week from Andrew. So big show coming up.
Yeah, I kind of jumped the gun. I'm still hopped up on potatoes and gravy, but I am Corey Butler. You are Ira Carlson, of course. I did say you by name, so feel free to say hi now that you've done your bit.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Teen Talk or Love Chat, one of those things. But yeah, great show. We had a great interview with those two. I had a really good time at the Badger Hill space. You obviously will get to hear more about that. Just a great facility. Kind of one of the elder statesmen's of the brewing scene here in Minnesota. They're only, what, 7 years old? 6 years old, somewhere around there, 6 or 7 years old. But given how rapidly this industry has grown, that makes them one of the older folks around. So it's nice of them that they shared some time with us. Obviously, it's great to have them on. Definitely one of the leading breweries in southern Minnesota, for sure. Not quite leading yet, but they're going to get there, I'm sure. We haven't talked news in a while. I think we've been so focused on beer samples, and we'll get there because we've got some again today that we haven't really done any updates, and it's kind of been slow, I guess, in our neck of the woods, but we did get word that there is a new one coming, just not too far from us in Northfield, down in Owatonna. It is a cooperative brew pub. It's called Foremost Brewing Cooperative, again, in downtown Owatonna, so they're looking to revitalize that city and their downtown. They're taking the option of Minvest to get some investors. We've seen other places do that. So that's a cool route where if you've got a certain amount of money, I don't recall offhand exactly the dollar amount, so I'm not going to just blurt it incorrectly, but it's not like $5. It's like one of those cases. It's not like a fundraiser where you buy a t-shirt. It's I've got X thousands of dollars. I want to be a partial owner of this cooperative. They're going that route, so that's kind of cool. It's pretty popular. I know there's at least 3 or 4 breweries that have opened in the state going that route through Minvest, so clearly a proven option in this world of economics where not everyone has the money sitting in their back pocket to just go open a brewery or maybe aren't able to get all the funding through loans or even grants. So that's kind of a cool option. So Foremost Brewing Cooperative, they're looking at spring 2019. So not too far down the road. We're looking, I guess that's 4 to 7 months, depending on how you define spring. So
well, and also then it's almost like dog years. You have to put brewery years in where, you know, expected opening compared to paperwork and everything else.
Yeah, we want to be optimists here, but yeah. The reality is that there's probably a couple bumps to run into.
There's some hoops.
Yeah, as we've documented here basically through 47 prior shows, that stuff happens. And even though you think this will happen correctly, this will happen correctly, we'll brew this day, we'll open this day. It doesn't always work out that way, but we hope it does for them.
Yeah, well, and that being said, so many are actually moving a lot quicker now. The state has responded appropriately, and a lot of those things move through a lot quicker than they did to begin with.
And that's kind of the benefit of having others lay that groundwork, right? So it's nice that the industry is now matured enough that all the proper governmental entities, whether they're at the city level, the county level, or the state level, or the federal level, for that matter, know what they're doing now. You hope. So seems like that has been expedited a little bit. So looking forward to that. That's just, you know, what, 35 minutes from us, depending on how quickly you drive. So we'll look to have them on the show, I'm sure, sometime next year once they get settled in and start producing some beer. So that's kind of cool. But today we've got a great show coming up. Listen to that show for sure. Listen to the rest of the show. But if you want to find out what else is going on with us, social media is a good place to catch up with us. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, search for On Tap Norfield. We should show up in all those places. We put up photos and updates and upcoming shows. Upcoming shows are pretty much reserved for Facebook, so that's a good place to keep up with what's coming up on the show. But with Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, we post photos and updates of where we're at. What we're doing, you were just at Giesenbroy. I don't know if you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah, we out for a little afternoon drive and looking for – actually, we were just trying to find somewhere to go eat and found out that there is a – not so much a food truck, but a farmhouse market in downtown New Prague, which is interesting all in itself. You should look that up. We won't go too far into it, but it's essentially a co-op that's only open 2 or 3 days a week, and everyone ends up with an access card. It's a – you go in and if you're a member – you go in and you pick up what you do, and you kind of like an honor system. You scan what you paid for, and you somehow pay for it through some system. But anyways, it's a really local, small, cooperative kind of a thing, and they were serving up some Reuben dogs, which was hot dogs, really, really good hot
dogs.
Sounds
really good right now.
Oh, yeah. And the buns were actually, you know, like a good rye bread bun, you know, for a hot dog with a little bit of cheese and a really nice sauerkraut on it. And it balanced amazingly well with their baby Wookiee.
You teased me with this.
Yeah, I know. I teased you because I was
bastard.
Normally, food trucks, I enjoy them and everything else, but I don't normally have like that food moment. And I had it here because the Reuben was amazingly good. And I was also having one of their baby Wookiees from Giesenbroy, which is a Poblano smoked beer that wasn't overly done too much on the spice. The spice was there, but the flavor was there, and it paired so well with that Reuben dog that I was blown away. Amazingly tasty. It was just a great little visit and stuff, and so ran into Aaron the next day when I was visiting Keepsake for one of their end-of-the-year kind of events and stuff, and ran into Aaron because he was in there, and I had to tell him about it myself because it was such a good, good experience. So, yes, the next day I went into Keepsake for their kind of their end of the year thing, their little Thanksgiving Harvest Fest. And so they had part of their room where they prepare the cider. They had a whole bunch of vendors and everything else in there. So bought myself some Cannonball's cheese. Yes. I went to Trudy and Tom and bought some of their, you know, the Treats by Tea, their hot jam. Got some duck eggs because I'm going to try those. You know, I was a sucker for pretty much most of the vendors in there. You know, walked out with some sheep blue cheese. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So,
and I spent last week in hunting in northern Wisconsin and visited some of those bars, and I was able to search out some good Minnesota craft beer occasionally, but the less said about the bars, the better, probably. Made it back alive, though, so that's good. And we're here to talk. So searched out some Bent Paddle beer and some Summit, and I was able to keep happy. But most bars, I had to go liquor. We'll leave it at that for northern Wisconsin. And we'll leave it at that for this part of the show. Stick around. We've got a good one coming up.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is coming out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's Founders Harvest Ale. It's kind of at the tail end of the fresh-hopped beers for this time of year, but this one is a wet-hopped ale coming out of Founders. Not too bad. It's 70 IBU, a little bit on the bitter side. Probably not my favorite fresh hop beer, but I think I'm also a little bit maybe palate fatigued by this point just because we've had so many of them over the last month and a half. But this one isn't bad, 7.6%, definitely an easy drinker. The bitterness isn't so much that you get a pucker face or anything else from it. It's just it's a nice solid bitterness to it. And I think maybe if I had had it at the beginning of the season when my palate wasn't overdone with it, I think I might have enjoyed it a little bit more. But still a solid beer.
Yeah, it's a tricky style because with the case with any ale, especially IPAs, as the hops wear off over time, it changes how the beer tastes, obviously. So when it comes to fresh hop beers where the hops are thrown in fresh and quickly, they also should be consumed rather soon. That doesn't mean that you can't drink it 2, 3, 4 months down the road. It's just the beer will not be what it was originally intended to be. Yeah, I'm still getting that hop flavor in here. It definitely has wore off a little bit, but tasting it here and kind of swishing around my mouth, I'm really getting that pine flavor. It comes through, kind of just settles in on the tongue. A little bit of a sweetness. I mean, it's still a pleasant beer. I like it. I'm with you where I've had so many fresh hop beers this fall that maybe I'm just ready to move. Especially if we're looking outside. It's 20 degrees right now. There's snow on the ground. We're ready to move into some of these bigger, bolder, warming beers. This makes me think more of September, October, maybe like early October, definitely September. So maybe mentally we've moved on, but I still think it's a nice beer. It would be interesting to taste this fresh as soon as it comes out. Again, with these bigger national breweries, regional breweries, you know, this isn't like going downtown, whatever town you live in, with your local brewery where they literally had the beer poured out the day before. This is packaged, sent over somewhere else. So that has some effect on it. Doesn't mean it can't be good. I still think it's a nice beer. So definitely I would check it out even this year still, just see in your mind how it kind of comes out with knowing that the hops had wore off.
Yeah, and I mean, I think from a flavor standpoint, it's definitely one where you could sit and have several of them. It's not one of those ones where the flavor is so big and so intense that you kind of only want to have one. It's definitely a very nice, enjoyable beer.
And that's often the case with these fresh hop beers. It's an overpowering flavor.
Yep.
And that's intentional, right? So if you let that kind of subdue it over time, it changes how the beer tastes. And that's the case with any style of beer. Time will change the beer for many different reasons. In this case, the hop wears off. And coincidentally, we have another fresh hop beer. This one from Deschutes. Again, another national brand known for making some very good beers. This is their 2018 release of their fresh hop IPA made with Strata hops. So this is the Chasin' Freshies fresh hop IPA. So this comes in at 65 IBU, a little bit more ABV on it, 7.4. What's interesting about this one is it's bottle conditioned, so they throw the yeast in the bottle and let it do its work there to turn the sugar into alcohol. So that helps keep the life of the beer a little bit longer than maybe some of these other ones that come out. So this definitely tastes a little fresher to me. It even says on the bottle, which I think is interesting because I don't know how you gauge this in general, but especially when you have fresh ingredients, the hops, and when you have bottle conditioning to have a best buy date. But this is still good for another month, so that's what they put on there. You put all the faith in their ability to say that, and it definitely tastes good to me still. You know, it still packs a powerful flavor punch there. Getting kind of a tropical fruit flavor there. Maybe a little pine, but maybe that some of that pine's carrying over from the last one. But what do you think, Ira?
I definitely taste the pine. I mean, it's interesting. I was trying to figure out the flavor, and you brought up the tropical, and I'm almost thinking mango-ish, if anything. But it's definitely
some citrus in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's a big bite at the end. It's almost like catches you by surprise. It's definitely a drinkable beer. If you want to try either of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they all can be conveniently found south on Highway 3 in Dundas at Firehouse Liquor.
Look for the fire truck. All right, now we're coming to you from the beautiful space in Shakopee, Minnesota, Badger Hill Brewing Company, hanging out with Mike and Ariel. How you guys doing?
Doing awesome.
Good.
Thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks for having us. Appreciate it. Why don't you guys do a quick introduction of who you are and what you do here at Badger Hill? Ladies first, maybe?
Oh, sure.
Since you're staring at each other.
We can do that.
He needs me, Ariel.
Yeah.
Yes, Lady Michael first. Hi, I'm Ariel. I'm one of the brewers here at Badger Hill. I've been with the company for 8 months now. Hasn't even been that long, but I'm here doing things all the time.
And they're allowing you to make a public appearance?
I know, right?
You must be doing okay.
They're letting me come out from behind the glass wall.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm Michael. I'm not technically a founder of Badger Hill. I started as the head brewer. I was going to start my own brewery, and then I realized how hard starting breweries is, and I teamed up with Brock and Britt in, I believe, 2012. So I was previously head brewer, and now I'm CTO, because I like technology. And really, technology makes beer. Like a violin maker makes a violin so a violinist can play the freaking violin. So, like, my point is, like, it's fun to work on the technology of beer. It's fun to work on beer, but I really like working with brewers on empowering their vision. So that's been that shift in my focus.
So you're kind of like machine master and puppet master all in one?
Exactly.
A little bit?
No.
I'd be curious to hear about that transition, though, from head brewer to the technology side, because usually at this point we're talking about the brewery and where people can find it, but I think we can get back to that, because I want to talk about what that actually means, being a CTO, chief technology officer, in a brewery.
Yeah. It means he overcomplicates things in the brew house for us.
You tap the gauge harder than anybody else?
Yeah, I poke it harder now. You know, Chase, our previous head brewer, was remarkably good at brewing. And like, I like to think I'm good at it. I also like to think that I recognize talent that exceeds my own. And I very much saw that Chase was a better like brewer than I am. I'm interested in technology and math and how things fit together, processes and such. So when I see the team struggling with, you know, challenges, like, to me, that's a call to do what I try to do. So I sort of feel like I said about the violin, like, beer requires technology. Like, we all know this. And the craft, it's a privilege to be able to work on a craft. Like, I wish more businesses were craft businesses, where people value what is not economical. Like, no, we want good more than we want economical. That's what craft beer is about, you know. So we have all this gear back here, and we have brewers who are trying to make these flavor miracles happen. And I think there's a way for businesses and brewers to work together to do that. So that's sort of where I see my sweet spot. Was that too long to say what I do here at Badger Hill?
Just overcomplicating things again. That's fine.
I'm just proving Ariel's point exactly.
Verified it. Yeah. Can't get on the back of a business card, though. So in the unlikely event that people aren't familiar with Badger Hill Brewing Company, where are you guys located and when did you open? I think you said 2012, but is that when you guys actually opened the doors?
We opened the brewery here in Christmas 2014, so 1-1-2015, if you will, in Shakopee, Minnesota. Impossibly far away from downtown Minneapolis, but not impossibly far away from many of our listeners is my belief.
And you guys, there's like a landmark across the street. Maybe that's a good reference point for us Minnesotans.
Ariel, are you aware of a landmark across the street?
I watch the roller coasters from the parking lot every day.
You can hear them scream from here. So Valley Fair is right across the street.
Yep.
So that's a good iconic landmark for those who aren't familiar with you.
Drop the kids off, come get drunk, pick the kids up. It's easy.
It's great.
You guys are kind of like the parent sitters in some ways.
Exactly. Yes, we're the adult daycare.
You can point at your kids like, they're screaming, they must be fine.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys not brew? I can't remember. Are you one of the breweries that brewed before you had your own space? Or did you not brew until you opened?
No, we brewed at Lucid Brewing.
That's what I thought.
In
okay.
Minnetonka, yep.
So you guys had stuff out in packaging before then, or just tap accounts?
Yeah,
or?
We were in bottles out of Lucid and in kegs. Also Bad Weather, our sort of sister brewery that's in St. Paul now. So the three of us were at Lucid Brewing in Minnetonka. Lucid is now called
Inbound
/ North Loop. It's hard for me to keep straight.
It's been in the tap room or the DBA, right?
Yeah, okay. And they're doing fine, and so is Bad Weather doing well in St. Paul. But yeah, we all started together.
So you guys had bottles. Was it triple? What was the rye one? Three-way rye?
Three-tree.
How come you guys stopped making that? Well, I really liked it.
No, we have a bunch of beers that we like and that our customers like, but just doesn't quite move the needle enough. And the tap room is really fun for those beers. Like, we can do a lot of things for our palates here at the tap room. In the market, you know, it's sort of like music. People will say they like your band.
Mm-hmm.
They might not buy your record. It's just the way it is. You know?
It's a business.
So, exactly.
You have to make money.
We
if
love
it's not
beer,
selling.
But we just
it was a very good beer.
Get the needle to move.
Yeah. I liked it.
I liked that analogy. That's a pretty good one.
So when you guys opened, you were the head brewer at that point?
Yep. When I joined, I was the head brewer.
And in this space, I'm guessing you guys have grown a little bit. How big were you guys when you originally opened? Where are you at now, system-wise?
When we started on a 15-barrel brewery, we built a 20-barrel brew house here. And then we went from sharing the brew house to using it ourselves. So I think we probably doubled from the time we were at Lucid to opening here. Like, as you guys know, as every listener knows, the context has changed a lot. Like, craft beer has changed a lot since we started in 2012. There was no tap room law when we started this brewery, you know? So the fundamental realities of this business have changed. So we're all pivoting as fast as we can. Summit, Surly, Fulton, any brewery you can think of, is throwing away their business plans and is trying to adapt to what's going on. So this is a fun problem. We all love this problem. It's where all businesses want to be, is like in a dynamic environment, you know? So it's challenging. Was there a question I'm supposed to be answering?
No, never. Well, I was going to ask, though. I mean, at 6, 7 years old, you guys are kind of one of the elder statesmen in the state outside of the longtime brew pubs and Summit and Surly, like you mentioned. Is that kind of weird to think 6, 7 years in business that you guys are probably in the top 15% as far as aged breweries?
Absolutely. Like, we work with breweries that we love, like Bauhaus, mm-hmm. who started after us. Like, we helped them. Steel Toe helped us. Like, there's a long tradition of helping breweries in this state. But then you see Summit, you know, the real granddaddy of craft beer in this state. Revolutionaries, like visionaries. Mark Stoutrud was a visionary, was. Like, Summit is the best brewery in the state, arguably in many, many ways. And yet, we're old now, you know, so it is really weird to be a young brewery and feel like you're old in some sense as well.
Is there an equivalency for age for breweries, like dog years? Maybe not quite 7 years per year, but maybe like 3 years, so you guys are finally hitting your strides, early adulthood kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Because clearly maturity is kept up, right?
Yeah. And like it's like music, again, where it's like, should every band have a music degree? Should every punk band have a music degree? Should Green Day or like, no.
Sometimes
like,
artistry just grows.
Different ways to accomplish things. So I think that's the revolution that's occurred. It's like, you don't have to do it like Summit did it. LTD in Hopkins, Minnesota, a brewery I love, yep. is not doing like Summit did it. They're doing it fine. They don't need to be fixed. Like, it's part of this new revolution in craft beer, so...
Well, not all size fits all, and different models and different approaches and different styles of beer, and you could be a staff of one, you could be a staff of 40. It's kind of, there's room for everyone.
And
so it's kind
passion
of cool.
as the main ingredient, you know. If there's not passion, it's not craft, roughly speaking.
Sure. So I'll ask Ariel this next, but Mike, what was your brewing experience before Badger Hill? Did you brew elsewhere?
I started brewing in college, so not that long after.
300 years ago.
I was bringing beer in college in 1986, maybe. And we were beating beer that we used to buy. So, like, Bass Ale in our homebrew. And our homebrew sucked. It was fresh. Freshness is what matters in beer. We'd never tasted fresh beer in 1988. I swear to God, we had never tasted it.
Sure.
And now in 2018, we only taste that. Like, beer that is not fresh tastes strong, you know? So this ginormous transition. But, yeah, I've been brewing since I could legally drink beer. I've been brewing beer.
Ariel, your background, we know you, of course, you had spent time at Tanzanwall in Northfield, one of our home-based breweries, but why don't you tell the folks about your experience?
Sure. So I started working at Harriet Brewing before they closed in 2016. I was their taproom manager, and I wanted to do a little bit more than that. There were two brewers that worked at Harriet that kind of saw my ambition and they showed me different ways to, you know, get into the brewing field. There would be times where they'd be busy, I was not busy, and it would be like, hey, you're going to clean this keg today. Hey, you're going to taste this beer unfiltered and filtered, and we're going to talk about it. And just simple stuff like that all the time. They were great about it. And
they were kind of on the front end of that kind of reemergence of brewing,
too,
right?
I mean, very much so.
They closed in 2016 after 5 years, right,
yep.
in operation.
They were one of the first taproom-only microbreweries in the state after the Surly Bell.
Cool like Belgians?
Yeah, I was going to say, with the bent on the Belgian style.
Yes. Very
so you
much
grew up in Belgians, and you like Belgians.
I do.
And probably one of the more unique spaces you could find in the state.
Yeah.
Ariel and I have talked previously about some of my interesting experiences just wandering in and like, oh, now that's happening.
Yeah, well, you'd be walking into. it was much like a frat party or somebody's basement. Anytime you'd walk in there, just anything could happen, and that was fine.
Which is like core to me of counterculture. Craft beer is counterculture. Yep. It's not culture. The big three was culture. We're counterculture. So Harriet, like, again, the tip of the spear of like, no, this is not your father's or mother's beer. Like, this is a new thing happening, which is a wonderful thing, and Harriet was a huge part of that, you know?
Well, I told the story with Ariel, but I came in one day just stopping. I was running some errands of the city, stop in for a beer, and there's a band playing. I'm not even paying attention. I'm having my beer, and I look over the stage, and the drummer has a panda head on. And is drumming with a panda head on. I just looked over and went, Yep, I met Harriet and went back to drinking my beer.
That was the last you thought of it.
Yes, common occurrences.
Full circle, that was Mike. Yeah. You didn't even know.
Exactly.
He keeps, you're a drummer, right?
Yeah.
It was my panda alter ego.
You're the guy playing the violin with the panda.
That's his camouflage as a panda head. Yeah, and then I met Steve Pittman and Genevieve Bell Pittman at Harriet a week before they closed, which was very serendipitous. They had mentioned that they were opening a brewery in Northfields in February, and at this point it was November. And I was like, okay, I don't even know where that is, but I'm not driving there. Like, I don't know who you are. I don't know how this is going to work. So I worked there for a year and a half. And
so you did drive to Northfield then,
eventually?
I drove
eventually. To Northfield from Bloomington every day for a year and a half. It was.
But they didn't open until April.
They didn't open until April. They said February. It was April.
Sounds like a brewery trying to open.
Is, yeah, that's the... The old brewer's tale, but it was awesome. Steve Pittman taught me how to brew. He taught me a lot about being in the cellar, a lot about Lagunitas and huge scale brewing compared to what we were doing. They have a 10 barrel system, so that was my jam. And now it's a nice little 30/40 barrel system here. So
kind of growing little by little.
Yeah, every little bit.
What's the biggest contrast from going from Harriet to Anzenwald to Badger Hill? Is it the size of the equipment? Is it the culture? Is it the beers you're making?
I would say it's...
Is it the people you're working with?
I work with a bunch of crazy people. I would say a lot of it is a technology aspect. When I worked at Harriet, I had no idea what a Zom was. And I learned what a Zom was at Tanzenwald. And here we use an Anton Par to check all of our carbonation rates.
So for those listening and those looking at you now who don't know what that is...
Sorry. So they're just different methods of checking carbonation. And they...
Makes sense.
Every level I've moved up, the tools have become more sophisticated. Whereas Harriet, we did not have any tools to check carbonation. It was, we're going to carb it, and then you're going to swish it around in your mouth, and if it foams up, it's carbonated.
Sensory.
We're good.
Yeah, the ultimate arbiter. Like,
exactly.
And ultimately, in the end, does it taste good? That's kind of what matters, right?
Exactly.
Just like music. Do you like it?
Right.
Doesn't matter if someone else does it. Do you like it?
And then, like, manufacturing, which craft beer does not seem like, you know, from the outside,
sure,
is about, like, reducing risk. How do you make beer not be a liability, you know? So that's, like, the main, like, balancing point, if you will. Like, craftspeople are trying to push the envelope, and manufacturers are trying to mitigate risk, you know? So... That's why, like, big breweries get sort of suckier, because they're trying to mitigate risk versus, like, embracing, you know, the core thing of innovation, you know? So that's the balancing point, because we cannot survive if we don't embrace the conservatism of manufacturing. We have to do that. We also need, the bravery of craftspersonship, you know? So that's the fundamental conflict, which is fun, you know? It's fun.
Which is why, I mean, you know, big-time beer gets... ragged on a lot because it's all about maximizing profits. Well, that's every business. You need to make money. But it's interesting in the science respect how a beer, and we won't, people know what we're talking about. We have to name one specifically, but a beer from Atlanta, made in Atlanta, would taste the same as a beer in San Diego, even though everything organically put in there is slightly different, but because they've got the recipe, they know how to break it down and alter what they need to alter. So, I mean, there's a respect for science to that, but
yes,
doesn't mean it's something you want to drink. But
yeah.
So how do you marry those two ideas?
Yeah, craft brewers respect brewers at, you know, Budweiser.
Right.
They are doing fantastic work. We don't like the product necessarily, but the work is
sure.
For sure, like, cutting edge, you know?
Yeah. I don't appreciate IKEA couches, but, you know, I
exactly
appreciate the work that goes into it. Yeah. So you've got quite the assortment of beers in front of us. Why don't we walk through what you guys are offering presently, because it's always changing here in Taproom, right?
Sure. So I've got 8 different pours in front of us. We've got the Trader IPA, which is our signature IPA. Our Goldie Ale, our Honey Badger, which is our seasonal IPA, our Zwickel Dort, which is our Dortmunder Lager, and then over here we've got the Badger Snack, which is a peanut butter stout, the F5, which is our refreshing kettle sour that has passion fruit and guava in it, and Turtle Haze,
the
which
best
is our
beer on the surface of the earth.
So our Turtle
F5
Haze.
F5 or Turtle Haze?
Turtle Haze.
Which we did with a collaboration with Turtles and Shakopee. And then we have our Oktoberfest on the end there.
So what stands out to you guys? What's your favorite beer currently? Because I'm sure they're all wonderful, and I've had probably four or five of them. But.
I would say mine's kind of always changing depending on what we're making. Of our core brands, I would say Hop Hill is my go-to. If I just want a beer, that's what I go for. Otherwise, the Honey Badger.
That's a pale?
That's our pale ale. And the Honey Badger is something I'm kind of into a lot right now. Which is that one right there. Yep, perfect. So it's a nice little... take a swig.
So, rhetorical question, but are you guys
nice and malty
hop heads?
I like
rhetorical.
Beer.
Rhetorical. Meaning don't answer.
No, I'm going to answer.
Okay, fine.
Because you asked me, I don't care if you...
It's rhetorical.
...prefaced it with a rhetorical question. I tend towards bolder flavors. I've been, not since the 80s, but I've been drinking craft beer long enough where you kind of look for that next challenge on the palate. Not that I want to be burning my tongue all the time, because I can appreciate a good Oktoberfest and come back to, especially this time of year, a nice nut brown ale or a really good porter. Or a stout. You guys' foundation stout's one of my favorites. But I like to be challenged a little bit and make sure those flavors mesh well, because not everything on paper always looks good. When you've got four different adjuncts and three different malts and six different hops, maybe on paper it sounds okay, but it doesn't always translate that way.
Yeah. And if I may for 1 second, I believe that the American craft beer revolution is about hops. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that the only good thing about American beer is hops. I'm not saying that. But the point of this beer was hoppy beers. Summit Extra Pale Ale was a hoppy beer. We used to walk out of a bar if they did not have Summit EPA.
Boston Lager was my hoppy beer.
10 people would turn around. Yes, exactly.
That was my starter hoppy. Holy crap.
We wanted hops, and we were not being given it by beer, you know what I'm saying? So, craft beer is about too much hops. Surly, Stone, a ton of Sierra Nevada, a ton of breweries that are telling us how good hops are in beer, you know?
Well, for me, my first really introduction to a hoppy beer was Summit's India Pale Ale. And it was a friend having a four-pack of it. And
showing his age.
At that point, I was the Budweiser boy, just drinking all this other stuff. And I'm like, what is this? I don't know if I want to drink that. And now I'm completely the other way, where we're all mad that the original India Pale Ale went away. They tried to change it to True Brit, and it's gone. And my wife and I are seriously disappointed. My wife will not switch over to Saga. She is just basically mad at Summit for getting rid of her beer after all those
years.
She
tried to punish them. For that.
I brought it up to Damon, and he didn't really respond to me. I don't know. Maybe my protest wasn't good enough. But, I've always kind of enjoyed a good hoppy beer and everything else. In fact, my first introduction to you guys was Trader IPA, Firehouse Liquor in Dundas. I went in to go watch a baseball game on a Sunday afternoon. Or actually, it might have been 4th of July. And I pick up a six-pack of it, and I'm just like, oh, I'll try this beer. And I head over to the ballpark, sit in the sun, enjoying a couple of those, and I should have probably read the later label on the strength of it, because I was a very happy individual by the end of the baseball
too
game.
Too happy,
so, yeah.
Apparently.
Wasn't that the point of the 4th of July? America?
I
was trying to say it was more of a slurring. I was trying to say America, and it came out America.
It's pretty bad when you're calling baseball and you can't even call the names.
No, I was viewing.
He was a passive observer.
I wasn't going to go with first names for this inning.
I wasn't on the mic. It was an away game, but...
Oh, okay. I thought one cool thing that you guys did, and I think you still do, is you had, the mixed six-packs where it was three of each. I thought that was pretty innovative, because we're in a time where people want to obviously try things. That's why tap rooms are excelling so much, because they want to come in, maybe have a beer or two of one, and, that's... We were talking about the hop head thing. It's always, what's the next big thing, and... Which is kind of stupid, right? Because you should have things you like and go back to. But yeah. I like the idea of doing kind of that smaller mix pack versus here's a 12-pack. You have to buy 12. Six isn't a huge investment. You can try two of each. I thought that was really cool.
And I don't want to pat ourselves on the back, but I sort of felt like that too. We're giving people a choice.
Yeah.
In one shelf space, you get two beers. We're doing the mixed 12-pack now, which is also fun. And my point about hops
is
not everyone likes hops. Right. A ton of people come to this brewery and what's the least hoppy thing? So it's absolutely not about hops. It's the point of the spear, in my opinion. But it's the entire spectrum. And that's why, flexing our wings here at the tap room, and that's the thing I think people don't know about Badger Hill, is we're making a ton of great beer every single week. Every week in this tap room, there's fantastic beer. Like, if you don't get to Shakopee, which is hard to get to Shakopee, you know what I'm saying? But if you don't get to Shakopee, you're not going
to
know that
the amount of
innovation we're doing. You know?
You're not selling the space very well. It's not hard to get here.
It's easy to get
to Shakopee. It's like 7 miles off of 35W. It's not that far.
And you're probably close enough already wherever you are. But
it's just around the corner.
And there's beer innovation going on here, which is my point. And it's not just in hops, and I love the hop side, but we're doing like Dortmunders and Oktoberfests.
It's not a style you see a lot. Right?
Tons of stuff that is more esoteric, and I don't think we're known for. And that's the pain in my heart of like, come taste our beer. Like, we are brewing great beer. These people are deeply dedicated to what we're doing, but you don't get to taste it if you don't come to Shakopee. It's like a conundrum, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's the label that any brewery that has a solid footprint in the market in terms of liquor stores or tap rooms gets stuck with. That, oh, well, they're known for Hop Hill, they're known for Foundation Stout, because that's what people see. So they, well, it's good they associate that with you guys because you make it. They're missing out on what they could be getting here.
Exactly.
Whereas some of those smaller kind of boutique breweries, I guess, that are only taproom exclusive because they don't have distribution, they're no, oh, what are they doing crazy this week? So you can do both, surprisingly, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, and I think it, you talked about it earlier about being one of the older brewers in the state. While you're not very old, you've still already been put in a category of you're in full distribution, you have things in the liquor store, so people make that tie into that's the only thing you have. You talk about Summit. Summit's Surly are both taking time to also show you a lot more interesting things, especially if you go to their tap room. It's just that you got to get there, you got to try it out. Everyone judges you based upon what they see in the liquor room, on the shelf of the liquor store. That being said, there's a lot more options out there now.
Absolutely.
So, like your Oktoberfest in front of me, that's not out there, but it's here, and it's probably near the end of its life, I'm guessing, just because of how seasonality works. But Marzen style, very nice. So you want to talk a little bit about what goes into that and how people could differentiate Oktoberfest from one place to another?
I guess if I could take my take on that, but we used to do an Untoberfest. It became Honey Badger, which you guys are tasting. But like, Oktoberfest is awesome. People love that beer. Like, Germany has this tradition in, you know, autumn beers, but I don't want to drink Oktoberfest. It's great. I love to have one. I'm an ale drinker. I'm an American beer drinker, you know? So for us, Untoberfest, like, what's the American version of Oktoberfest? Was germane. I'm not saying it's more important than Oktoberfest. It's part of this that tradition, you know? German breweries, God bless their heart, they put like 10 hops in their beer. We put a trillion hops in our beer. Like, we have a different mindset than German breweries about beer, you know? Even with Oktoberfest, we think about it differently. So, I don't know. To me, like, the craftsmanship of trusting, you know, people who love beer to make beer and putting the cultural twist on it. Like, do you need to have a German Oktoberfest beer in America? Not necessarily. Maybe. It's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad.
Right.
Like, we can do it our way here, you know, so. Now, my point is, like, the innovation is partly seasonal. Like, yes, let's make Oktoberfest. But let's also make our spin on that and not try to think that we're somehow beholden to a tradition that we don't agree with. You know?
So outside of talking to people like us on shows like this, how do you make your brewery stand out among the 100-plus now, especially when you already have a brand out there that people are already pegging as a certain way? You guys are pushing the innovation in here. Obviously, you have the stuff in the market that's going to hopefully sell because, again, business. But how do you make people aware that we have the Untoberfest and we're doing these other things where we're pushing the envelope a little bit? Is there anything you guys are doing that helps get that message out there other than just chat with people when they're in here? Like, hey, look at this beer.
Well, the main thing is that we can now label beer. Like, we are labeling our cans. So we could not put beer out quickly in the past, and now we can. So when we come up with new beers, we can get them to market. So, like, that sort of shift. Like, I've heard that breweries that actually do pre-printed cans are trying to make those cans look labeled. Like, this is the authentic part of craft beer, is that we're labeling cans. We cannot afford to buy cans. So we're labeling cans. And now big breweries are imitating that because that's the genuine, authentic thing going on in craft beer. You know what I'm saying? So we're poor and absolutely passionate and driving the true innovation in beer versus the people who try to pretend they are. And I'm not talking about local breweries, you know? So that's the weird dynamic going on in beer right now.
So we do a lot of marketing on social media, and our woman Jen, she is in the back. She runs all of our social media and really just she pipes in all of the new ideas, beers that we're working on, any special releases. We do a lot of special releases for small batch specialty brews, like our Imperial Macchiato Stout, which we will be bottling next week. That one will be a special release as well.
I've seen the photos.
Yes, yes. So we have gold wax ready to go. It's going to be beautiful. And we, yeah, we kind of just, I don't know, push hard on the social media. And the mix packs have been a huge help because as a consumer, I know I always want a variety when I go to the liquor store. I don't want to commit to a 12-pack of something that might not be what I want.
Well, I like the mix pack idea of three of a kind. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I love that idea because I love the idea of a mix pack of three of a kind because I'm able to pick just two beers up. Most of the time I see the four pack that has maybe three beers that I or a beer that I really want to try out of there. But I got to pick up three others that I maybe am not that excited about. I'd rather spend my money, at least get half of them, be exactly what I'm looking for, and then try the other ones. So I love that idea of a mix pack of multiples.
Absolutely. So our new mix packs will have our vanilla macchiato stout in cans in it. And it'll also have our Hop Hill, Goldie, and Trader. So you get those standard core brands, and it'll always be a fourth beer shifting in and out depending on what we're making at the time. Our last mix packs had our Banana Stand Hefeweizen in it.
Which we have had on the show. We both liked it very much.
It is a great beer.
Yeah. Firehouse Liquor has been nice enough to for the samples of the week that they have us try. They've sent Badger Hill many times. So
fantastic.
Yep, we had Hop Hill. For the macchiato, the vanilla, is that the same base beer then? You just tweaked a little bit differently for the vanilla than the imperial? Or is the imperial the same thing, just in the...
Yeah, it's tweaked a little bit. I mean, obviously the grain bill on the imperial is much larger.
Right.
But, yeah, it's the same base. And we are using Cameron's Coffee. It's their Velvet Moon roast, which is awesome. I just put in the 30 pounds of raw beans into the Imperial a couple days ago. So that is almost ready. I will be filtering that beer in the next couple days.
So, but again, you guys are doing a lot of different things. So the Oktoberfest, that's coming out of season. You mentioned the F5, that's the Kettle Sour. Peanut butter beer, that's new. So always something new. What inspired you guys to do maybe the Kettle Sour? Because that's the sours have really picked up last couple of years. Not everyone's jumped into them. You know, we've warmed up to them a little bit more as we've had more on the show, both the traditional wood sours and also the Kettle Sours, but also the peanut butter beers are exploding. And clearly there's a demand for them, so that probably played a part into it, but you guys still have to make a good beer that you're happy with. So how do you come to terms with what you're making there? Not to say you shouldn't come to terms with it.
No, sours are interesting to me because like people have been saying sours are the new IPA.
For like 4 years now.
Exactly. For years.
And I don't think it's happening.
No, they're not. But clearly this is a palate addition that we like.
Right.
Consumers like it. Brewers like it. It's here to stay. I love our F5. It's our first main sour beer.
It's
but
tart. Yeah.
It's very drinkable. You know what I'm saying? Like it's almost wine-like.
Freshy. Yeah.
So, you know, part of our challenge, because we can only serve our own beer at our tap room, is people drag people here who don't like beer. And so, you know, a sour is a way of giving them an alternative choice in what flavor is like. And beer drinkers like it, too. Like, we mix F5 in with, we blend a lot of beers just because we get bored. So we go across the taps and we try different things. And that sour flavor is a hugely valuable part of the palate, you know. It's here to stay, absolutely, for sure. And like Wild Minds, friend of ours, like kill sour beers. Yeah. This is here to stay, and we embrace it. It's not the only beer; it's just part of it, you know.
Because that's kind of like the third question. If the first person comes in, they're going to ask, "What's your lightest beer?" Second person's going to ask, "What's your hoppiest beer?" The third person's going to ask, "Do you have any wine?"
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
So you kind of cover it all. Ariel, you did touch on this, but I want to make sure people know this will air the 24th, so the beer will be out by then, the Imperial Macchiato Stouts, something people should be here at, what, on Black Friday for? So you should go back in time, or is it before that?
It'll be before that.
So there, it'll be available when this
Choose
airs.
Choose your words carefully, Ariel.
It'll be before Thanksgiving.
Do you guys
it'll
have cold cans?
Wednesday, the 21st. You can buy your bottles.
Right,
I'm looking at this beautiful sign that's
Trust
telling me.
Verify.
I just make it. I don't make the dates here.
She doesn't even know who made that or why.
That's actually a Summit beer, isn't it? It's nice for you guys to promote them.
Have you guys had our Imperial Macchiato Stout?
No.
Because Macchiato is like a complicated word.
Yeah.
We don't have it right now, do we? We can't give them a taste right now.
I have it in an FB.
Oh, that says Macchiato. I thought it said Macho Man.
It's a
Macchiato sounds like a cream,
yeah.
But there's no cream in this.
Oh, there, okay.
It's coffee. It's fantastically good. And I have nothing to do with this beer, so I can say it's fantastically good. It's like syrupy.
It is.
Not quite sweet.
It's nice and roasty, malty, but not too sweet.
Great mouthfeel.
It's got a very solid mouthfeel. It'll just warm you up.
And I'm a hophead, and I don't like beers like this as my favorite beer. And I've said this is the best beer I've ever had. For not having hops, it's a fantastic beer.
So people, it'd be great for Thanksgiving, but people listening to this have missed, or hopefully they had a good Thanksgiving. It's now Saturday. They're probably recovering from shopping like idiots. I'll say that on air. But they should go buy this, right? Because is it available?
This will be so much better.
Obviously here in the tap room, but also I'm guessing in select liquor stores throughout the metro.
Yes.
So the brewery has also become known for some of the collaborations you guys have been doing. You alluded to Brian Turtle, Turtle's Bar and Grill. You've also done the Month Valley Fair. I think you did one other one as well, right?
With Canterbury Downs.
With Canterbury Downs. So how do those kind of come about? How do you develop them both in terms of actually coming to an agreement on doing it, but then also the beers themselves? So I think that's kind of a cool operation you guys have done. I mean, there's other places that do it with, like, restaurants or maybe obviously other breweries, but to do non-industry folks, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. You know, like, we're in an entertainment district of Minneapolis, even though most people maybe don't track on this, but Canterbury Downs, Valley Fair.
South River, right?
Mystically.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
River South,
yeah. So there's a, like, when tourists come to Minneapolis, they come to Shakopee. They also go to the Mall of America. They're not in Uptown. They're not in Northeast. They're in freaking Shakopee. And I'm not kidding, you know? So we have a huge influx of people coming into here. So, like, we see Mystic Lake, Canterbury Downs, Valley Fair as, you know, our allies. We're all working on this together. And they're wonderful people. Like, it's absolutely aligned with us to do a beer for Valley Fair. You know, we did Delirious. It's like a blueberry infused beer for their new ride called Delirious. It was slightly Prince themed, like Prince has a song called Delirious. Prince was associated with the color purple. Both these things.
Is that so?
You don't say.
You've done your homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, trying to prove to people what you said, like Shakopee's not impossibly far away. You come here, the people that come to visit you in Minneapolis come here. We're the entertainment. We're like Las Vegas of Minneapolis. Do you guys want to argue with that?
You're like downtown of Las Vegas, Minneapolis?
No, the strip part.
Oh, the fun part, not the creepy part?
Is here in Shakopee. less creepy, more
part.
Like you get money and sex.
Okay.
Maybe drugs, if that's your thing, which it probably isn't, because you're a normal person.
We're all about normal listeners. So collaborations are good. Speaking of collaborations, you know, something you guys have been in the works, I think, for a couple of years now. Obviously, you've had several interviews, stories about it, is your alternating proprietorship with Finnegan's. Now, it's kind of a unique setup. You want to explain how that works? Because I'm sure people are like, how do you guys share space, share equipment, and have different beer?
So it might be like sort of inside baseball or whatever, but proprietorship is a license where you can brew beer at someone else's brewery. Like, so that's literally what the license law says. So Finnegan's was building a brewery downtown. Like, downtown needs a brewery, right? Like, they have a wonderful tap room, wonderful beer, right downtown. Like, it's almost underserved compared to Northeast.
Yep.
Like, downtown is underserved, you know? But building a brewery downtown that makes 10,000, 15,000 barrels is literally not possible. Like, you cannot ship 15,000 barrels of beer out of downtown Minneapolis. Minneapolis does not want you to. So Finnegan's was in this position, like, we have this beautiful opportunity, but we can't fulfill our mission there. So we were sort of a partnership of, like, saying, like, take the money you would put into a brewery in Minneapolis and put in a brewery in Shakopee, and you get all of the beer you need without Minneapolis screwing with you, and it costs you way less money, and all your money can go towards your super sweet tap room, and it's a very sweet tap room, you know?
Yeah.
So it was very strategically aligned, where we can do the heavy lifting of their beer and they can do the sexy part of their beer downtown, you know?
It's a great space. We went there, right?
Yeah, we were there this spring.
I thought that was you. I was drunk, though. I couldn't remember if that was you or not.
That was the day we were trying to go to a Twins game, and we find out as we're on the light rail that, oh, by the way, the game's canceled. So we just decided to make it a brewery day.
So you're not going to drink and watch baseball. You're just going to drink, which is twice as fun as watching baseball.
Yeah, they were free tickets, so, yeah.
And also we got to use the light rail as a, you know, opportunity to sober up on the way home and
be safe, kids.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. But yes, the Finnegan space is actually a remarkably upscale kind of a space.
It's too classy for us.
Yeah, I kind of felt like I had to have a suit and tie on, or at least a clip on going on.
Well, it's like maybe the nicest tap room, or the second nicest in Minneapolis. Like Surly is super nice.
Oh yeah,
Finnegan's is very, very nice.
Yeah.
It's comfortable. You know.
Oh, it's urban professional. It's a beautiful space in there.
So, like, we feel like, you know, you can't grow market share reliably in this market. We can't, like, run $1 million ad campaign like Drink Badger Hill and reliably grow our business. So, again, this is sort of inside baseball.
Sure.
We can work on efficiencies in making beer. Like, we don't want to limit what our brewers can make for beer. We want to allow them to make it economical so we can sell the beer, you know? If we don't have beer, we can sell. But so... Like Finnegan's is a step towards, I'd say it's the future model of breweries, like being able to reliably control costs, given that you can't reliably grow market share. So it's not sexy, but it's the way breweries will be in the future. You cannot just plan on being Summit and make EPA anymore. That's no longer a business model. That was our business model. Beat Summit at making the best beer in Minnesota. You can't do that. Not because we can't make the best beer, because that model is gone. It's more about the boutique style of approaching beer. So we want to, like, focus on our strengths in that sense. Like, no, let's make boutique beer that no one else literally can make, you know? So this ginormous shift has meant, like, partnerships like Finnegan's are the only way to really be a competitive brewery. So it's the new reality is that you have to be creative on the back end and not compromise the front end.
But in the meantime, you do have a nice space here. It's welcoming. We're here on a Thursday, not Thanksgiving. And you've got a number of people here. And you have a nice patio outside. You guys are kid-friendly. You're pet-friendly for the patio. You've got food. Obviously, you've got good beer. You've got merch for sale. This is a nice place to come hang out.
It's a dream come true, man. Seriously, it's a dream come true. So thank you for coming. Thank you for putting this on your podcast. And I'm not saying we have to quit right now, but
yeah, I was like, you can't give up now.
Don't leave me hanging, Ariel. Just, you know, for beer drinkers, this is the best situation we could possibly come up with.
Yeah.
Beer drinkers win. Like, go to Dangerous Man, go to Fulton, go to Surly, go to LTD. Like, this is your time.
It's definitely been a lively show. Ariel, Mike, appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Let's do it again.
Seriously.
Fun. It's refreshing.
Can they see us shake hands?
No.
Shaking hands.
Thank you. Thank you. You want some hot
It's refresh. I don't want to say other folks haven't been as passionate, but it's nice to see that true passion bleed through. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, guys. Keep up the great work, man. Seriously.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns, and I'm excited to bring you, for the Style of Week, my favorite beer in the world, Kolsch. Kolsch comes from Cologne, Germany, and it's got a really interesting history. It's like a lot of European beers, it's named for a specific city because brewers in that city started brewing a specific style. In this case, we're talking about a crisp, clean, pale yellow-colored, slightly hoppy, easy-drinking, dry German ale. Now, it's a lot like, say, a Pilsner or a Munich Helles, only those are lagers. And what makes the brewers in Cologne unique is that they are using ale yeast and fermenting a little bit warmer, which adds just a touch of extra character and flavor to this light beer. Now, the brewers in Cologne saw what was happening to the Pilsner style of beer and that everyone in Europe started brewing Pilsners, even if they weren't from Pilsen, and they thought that that name almost lost its meaning. So they banded together and they declared that the only brewers that can be called Kolsch in Europe are beer that is brewed right there in Cologne using only a restricted number of ingredients and all having the same characteristics, which is ale fermented, stored cold, filtered, and very clean, dry, crisp, clean beer. Now, American brewers have taken a little bit of license with that, and you'll see plenty of breweries out there serving up Kolsch or Kolsch-style ales. And they are all really a tribute to this fantastic, clean-drinking ale that originates from just one spot.
That's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Mike and Ariel for hosting us at Badger Hill Brewing Company in Shakopee, just across the road there from Valley Fair. Really great place to visit. We got a tour afterward. That was kind of cool. Got the, we didn't say it during the interview, but afterward we got a little taste of the big macchiato release, the Imperial Macchiato. So sometimes we're blessed. I don't say that often.
Yeah, it was a really nice visit. I mean, it helps. We have a good friend of the show, Ariel. You know, we've known her for a while, and so she was nice enough to help us get connected with Badger Hill, and of course the little behind the scenes of the whole environment. And it's kind of cool because, I mean, we've seen other breweries, but to see a place doing that volume, but also some of the contract work and some of the other aspects of it, kind of fun to be able to get a little background tour of the place.
Yeah, the alternating proprietorship is pretty cool. But like you said, good to see an old friend, Ariel. See a new friend, Mike. He was obviously very fun, as you heard with the interview. So good to know him now, and hopefully we'll probably see him down the road. I'm sure we'll be back there again at some point. But great place. Folks should definitely go check that out. They should also check us out here in 2 weeks. We will be back on December 8th. That's 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio, 95 The One FM. Also online at ontapnorfield.com. We have Tim Rhodes making his big return. We're going to catch up with him and his son Dylan at his space this time in Jordan. So we'll have to be better behaved than we probably were last time when he paid us a visit, but because we'll be on the road. But had a great time visiting Tim before. It's going to be exciting to catch up with him as they celebrate another anniversary coming up here in December. And, you know, it's just fun what he does with their system and just kind of changes things always. As microbreweries are prone to do. So it's going to be fun to see what he's working on.
Well, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy that isn't more enthusiastic about mm-hmm. brewing. You know, he really is. I mean, he's just an enthusiastic guy, but he gets going a little bit, and it's hard to get a word in otherwise.
He's the epitome of passion.
Yep.
And he loves what he does and loves to share it with others and tell them about it. He's the one who introduced us to the brewed IPA when we were going through town that one time. And
yep.
We were kind of, it was just starting to come out, and he was on the forefront of that, at least locally. So always wanted to chat with you. I've also had great pretzels when we were there and great mustard. So looking forward to paying a visit. I hope he has some mustard and pretzels because I think we'll probably need it. So make sure you don't miss that show. That's here in 2 weeks. If you don't catch us live here on KYMN Radio, like I said, ontapnorfield.com is a good place to catch us. Otherwise, iTunes, Player FM, Google Play, all those podcast places. We show up at just about all of them. So good place to check us out there. Otherwise, go to our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, search for ONTAP Norfield. You can kind of see what we're doing with the shows, see who's on, what's coming up, the photos I'm posting of all the beer samples we're getting. Like we said at the beginning of the show today, we had quite a few again today, and that will be the theme here for the next several weeks and really has been the theme since probably July. So thank you to all those who are willing to share with us their beer and for us to talk about them. We definitely do appreciate it. We also appreciate your patience because we want to make sure we give them all their fair time, and it just takes a while with us being only every other week. So another good round of beers today. I'm sure the next several shows would be very good based on what I have sitting in my fridge right now. So make sure you check back and see what we're talking about with that. But if you want to get a sneak preview of what's coming up with the beer samples, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook are good places. I post photos of all that will be coming up on there. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Cheers.
Cheers.